are live once again, coming to you from the city of brotherly love, none other than Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, broadcasting from and hanging out in the WWDB 860 AM studios. You've tuned yourself in to another episode of the Health Coach Of Show, where we are leveling the playing field around physical and mental health. What that means is we are bringing you the best ideas for what actually works for managing health issues, not just what has the most money behind it. We are also celebrating our first ever one-hour episode today, and that's definitely a good thing because God knows I have quite a bit to say. By the way, I'm your host, Evan Transu, aka Health Coach Ev. You can reach out anytime or check out my work at evantransu.com. Well, we have a full house today with some absolutely incredible women. First up is a special guest appearance from my girlfriend, Fallon Morningstar, who is in the studio for the first time, and she may just be joining us a bit more in the future. Wink, wink. Fal, how's it going over there?
Good morning, everyone. So happy to be here.
All right, we're glad to have you. Next up is one of my best friends, Allie Litvak, who boldly volunteered herself to be the narrator of the show today. Al, are you ready for this undertaking?
Hey, Ev. Yes, I'm so excited.
Okay, yeah. All right. Hopefully that sounds a little more optimistic when we get to the ads. And last but not least, we have our featured guest of the show today, here to share her story with us, Lily Riley. Lily graduated with a degree in social work from Westchester University and has started pursuing a master's degree from Temple University. She also completed a full Ironman in 2019. Now, I had to look that up to see exactly what an Ironman entails, and apparently it consists of a 2.4-mile swim, a 112-mile bicycle ride, and a marathon, which is 26 miles of running, done in that order. Is that correct? That's what you did?
Unfortunately, and absolutely yes.
Okay. How long does this take, roughly?
So you actually have a time limit. You have up until 17 hours to complete it.
Okay. All right. She's also a certified personal trainer and international rugby player playing in the Italian Premier League, hopefully, if COVID permits, in the 2021 season. Also COVID permitting, she'll be moving to Barcelona in December to teach English. Lily, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm super, super excited for the conversation we have.
So Lily has an incredible story relating to mental health, disordered eating and eating disorders. And the main focus of the show today is absolutely going to be centered around a kind of eating disorders in the holidays. This was a last second fill-in. We were trying to get Lily on the show before, but scheduling with the Barcelona thing just wasn't working out. So it's almost like it was supposed to happen because we're broadcasting right now from, the day before Thanksgiving. Holidays are coming up. And I asked you because I didn't know anything really about the eating disorders and how they'd relate to the holidays. And you said that's probably one of the tougher times of the year, right?
Yeah, I would absolutely say so. And I think everybody in the community can attest to that as well, that it's a really triggering time for, you know, a multitude of reasons, which obviously we'll get into. But absolutely, this is a really important time.
Okay, so what's nice about this hour show is that we actually have some time to get into the background of our guests and really just get to know them a little more. The 30 minutes just wasn't enough. So Lily actually, I guess we got connected again after high school because she reached out to be on a mental health podcast that I just started at the time, called Overcoming Mental Health Challenges. And still to this day, Lily is like two plays away from being the top episode on there out of like 50 episodes. I mean, people really connected with that. So to a summarized degree, but to the degree that you're comfortable as well, let's go back in time a little bit and talk about maybe what you were like as a kid and some of the things that you were experiencing, because it was a lot more than just disordered eating, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important that we're touching on this because eating disorders are a manifestation of any issues that you have. So it's really important to kind of touch back on things that we've been through. So I grew up in a pretty abusive household. I grew up with six other siblings, and then my parents ended up getting divorced when I was around 9 years old. That took quite a turn, and then my mom had been in a relationship with another abusive man. I was sexually abused for like 3 years, and my sisters were as well. And then, you know, leaving that, I was probably around like 12 years old. And then about when I was, I would say 16, 17, I had like my first real, real relationship, and it was extremely abusive in all different aspects. Mm-hmm. And that had, you know, changed me, who I was, affected how I navigated life moving forward. And then, yeah, I had dealt with, PTSD because of that, obviously everything else as well, depression, anxiety, and then my eating disorder, all in throughout that time.
So I think we had talked about this before, I'm not going to hone in on this point, but we had always talked about it's so unfortunate that it seems that people that are in these abusive situations, especially when they're younger, like they wind up in more. Like, why does that happen? Because obviously they're not attracting that, but it's almost like they accept that this is somehow normal or whatever. I mean, what happens to these people that go through this?
Yeah. So, I mean, you think about how our brains form when we're younger, you know, we form this idea of what is normal, and especially with relationships, which I think is really important because that's where I kind of navigated towards in the future. So my normalcy of what a relationship was toxic. It was a lot of gaslighting. It was abuse. It was me not feeling good enough. It was me feeling like I had to do everything to prove myself to that person. And it just shaped my idea of what reality was in each relationship that I entered. And that was even, unfortunately, in some friendships. And not that I experienced any abuse in friendships, but I experienced certain aspects of what I understood was normal. And I think it's, you know, it's about breaking a cycle and kind of rewiring your brain. You know, if you've been through some type of trauma, your brain literally rewires into that becoming a reality. Mm-hmm. So obviously it takes years and a lot of practice and a lot of therapy,
right,
to kind of just shape and rewire what we learn is actually normal and healthy.
Right. And I think I've heard this before. It was kind of with someone I interviewed for one of the podcasts, but nonetheless, they said, you know, they had grown up in a family where I think both parents were alcoholics. And they said, I feel, you know, so silly saying this, but until I started going to other friends' houses at like, I think 8 or 9 years old, I never realized that that was not normal because you're a kid. You don't know any better. So it wires our brains into thinking that this is what life is like. This is what it's about. This is what happens. And that's pretty scary stuff. So one of the things you've become so passionate about that we already mentioned is, I mean, like a lot of your Instagram page and even what you talk about focuses around the eating disorders and disordered eating. I know you're very comfortable sharing this stuff, so I appreciate that. I mean, how did that start? And I guess, how does this relate to the other things? Because would you say that those things would have never happened if you didn't experience the things you experienced, correct?
Absolutely, okay. 100%.
So how did those start out? Like, what was the first symptoms?
So, and you're speaking with the beginning of my eating disorder, correct?
I guess, yeah, from day one, pretty much.
So, it's weird because I even asked myself that question. I'm like, when did this start? You know, because in all the work that I've done, it's like, okay, let's backtrack and see where this manifestation all started, unfortunately. And, you know, it started with, I think the earliest thoughts I have about my body and how I perceive my body was that I was like not good enough and I felt like gross in my body at a young age. And I think that has to attest to how my mom used to speak to me and how I was treated by her and how I was treated and how it made me view myself. And it really, and it's crazy because I was like 8 years old. I was 8, 9 years old. And I was talking to my stepmom about this the other day. I went to, I don't know if anyone knows in this area, Great Wolf Lodge.
Yeah. That was awesome.
And yeah, so I was there and I was there with my younger sister and then our really good friend who was her age and then her mom. And I remember her mom was like taking photos of us. And mind you, I think I was like 9 years old and I was in a bathing suit and I was a string bean when I was little, like complete string bean. And I remember thinking I was so overweight. Like I had this perception that like I was bigger. And the thing is, I also grew up as an athlete, which is like a whole nother side to this,
right,
obviously.
Right.
And I remember her taking those pictures and I was so uncomfortable and I just didn't want to be in the pictures. I didn't want to see them. And I remember looking back like years later and I was like, what was I thinking? Like, I was so tiny. And like, where was this idea coming from? And it's just crazy to think that someone that young has this just twisted view of themselves. And yeah, and I just think that that view just kind of carried on the rest of my life. And obviously, as I transformed and moved through my life, through different experiences, those thoughts took different shapes,
right,
and took different behaviors. And I think the first kind of disordered eating kind of behavior, and sorry, let me just backtrack a bit too as well. You know, my mom had also, I think, experienced disordered eating because, you know, she had always been on diets. She had always been, she told me when I was younger that her biggest fear was that her kids were going to be fat. Like that was, she had said that to me. Right. And I was like, oh, well, I can't be fat. Like, and I had this negative connotation to the word fat and this idea that if I was fat, like I was gonna be good enough for my mom, I wasn't good enough for my friends, like people wouldn't like me, I wasn't gonna be desirable from a young age. So this was like instilled in my mind that this is like a foundational concept as to how I'm gonna move forward and how I'm gonna navigate my relationships. Like, don't get fat.
Right.
And And then I just remember, like, you know, and also as like social media took off, I think that was like a really big influence in how I navigated my disordered thoughts of myself, and it turned into an eating disorder. Like, I started experiencing anorexic behaviors when I was 14 years old. And that's when I started, you know, girls were saying like, oh, like, I'm not going to eat lunch. I'm not, like, we would sit at lunch and they would like throw their lunch out, or they would cut up apples and like have little bits, and like, I'm full. And I was an athlete at this time, like running around doing whatever. And I was hungry. Like, I can still eat so much food.
Well, especially the stuff you're doing. I mean, the Ironman, like, you probably have to consume, you know, double the calories I consume to maintain, you know, something like that. Oh, and that's an incredible amount of exercise.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And as I got older, you know, my appetite increased because I was getting more, you know, into sports. I was getting more intense into sports. You know, when I got really into soccer, I was starting to lift. And like, aside from all my practices and, you know, skill training, I was lifting on top of that. I was doing speed sessions, and my appetite was increasing, and everyone around me was not eating as much. And I was taller. Like, I don't know if you guys remember, like, I've always been pretty tall, and I've had like a muscle in my body. Sure. And I haven't been like a super, super tiny girl. And I remember someone like made a comment or something about how I was like bigger than other girls, but they didn't mean it in that way. But because of the mindset that I was in, I was like, oh my God, like, they're saying I'm fat. And it brought me back to my mom, like, I'm not going to be desirable. And it was just this really cyclical thinking my entire life. And I think it's kind of hard to pinpoint exactly like when it got worse. But I think just, you know, going through life and all the things that I went through definitely amplified those thoughts and those behaviors. And it created this sense that I had to control things because my life was so crazy, so out of control. And I was like, oh, the one thing that I can control is the way that I perceive myself, the way that I look, and my food.
Right. And that's what I've heard a lot, that this is a huge condition around just trying to control things. I mean, we only have about 50 seconds before the break, but I mean, is that the most common theme? Because you're studying this stuff clinically now, as we mentioned earlier, like, you're actually getting the degrees in these topics. I mean, is that a common theme? Are most people trying to seek that control with these disorders?
Absolutely. And in some sort of way, control is like the biggest overarching theme there.
Okay. And I feel like even for myself, looking back and like having panic attacks, anxiety, all of that was centered around control. Fal and I were just, you know, on a plane recently. And it is so cool to me now to be able to get on there, because I had a huge phobia of that. And I don't like it. Trust me. I'd rather be on the ground. I'd rather be hanging out with you guys right now. But I can't get to that place anymore of like the panic where I need to get out of here. Like that control, level of control, right?
Right.
Like, stop the plane. I need to go. So we'll touch more on that and much more right after these quick commercial breaks.
Tired of talk radio shows that are nothing but Trump, Trump, and more Trump? Looking for something that actually has some relevance to your life? Then tune into The Pennsylvania Project. Hi, I'm Ken Krawchuk, host of The Pennsylvania Project. Our mission is to showcase the political, cultural, and environmental challenges facing contemporary Pennsylvania, and we're all about solutions. So tune in Mondays, 3 p.m. here on WWDB, 860 a.m. in Philadelphia. When the problem is same old talk radio, the correct solution is The Pennsylvania Project.
Hey, Allie, how's it going?
Not so great, Health Coach Ev. It's the holiday season.
What? Shouldn't that mean you are merry and jolly?
Well, I'd like to feel that way, but my family's coming to my house this year. That means that I'll have to deal with the embarrassment of my dog, Skippy, jumping all over them as soon as they walk in the door.
Oh, that old Skippy. Hey, I have just the solution for you, though. Have you heard of Eric Katz with Katz Dogs Canine?
Katz Dogs Canine?
Yeah, Katz Dogs Canine. Eric Katz is a great friend of mine who has been in the dog business for years now. He offers doggy daycare, boarding, and training for Bucks in Montgomery County. The guy's got more five-star Facebook reviews than you can count, and he even won Best of Montgomery County for boarding and pet training.
So you're telling me that Eric can get Skippy to finally stop jumping on people and embarrassing the heck out of me?
You bet. I actually lived with Eric for a while and saw him fix issues like that in a matter of 2 to 3 weeks. The guy's a dog whisperer.
Okay, I'm in. Where can I find him?
You can get in contact with Eric by heading over to catsdogscanine.com. Katz is spelled K-A-T-Z. That's catsdogscanine.com. When you give him a call, tell him you know Health Coach Ev.
And now it's time for the Health Coach Ev fact of the day. Did you know vitamin D isn't actually a vitamin at all? Well, technically, it's a vitamin 2, but it's actually a hormone. Since the body naturally synthesizes vitamin D in response to the skin being hit with UVB light, it can be viewed as a hormone. However, since vitamin D is also consumed in food, although in much lesser amounts than we can get from the sun hitting our skin, it is also, by definition, a vitamin. Impress your family tomorrow on Thanksgiving by letting them know about this cool fact.
And we're back. Welcome to the Health Coach Ev Show, where we are leveling the playing field around physical and mental health. I'm your host, Evan Transu, a.k.a. Health Coach Ev. Full house today with Fallon Morningstar, Ali Litvak, and our featured guest, Lily Riley. We're talking about mental health, eating disorders, disordered eating. We got into a lot of Lily's background in the first 14 minutes. And during this next segment here, I think we're going to be talking more about how this is relevant to other people and the things that we can do, because Lily's learned a ton, and she's just, I mean, a wealth of knowledge about these things. So one thing that I had to mention before I forget, I actually wrote it down because it's important to me, is the conversation you and I had around anorexia. I am very tired of people acting like this is some kind of attention-seeking behavior, which I also know that we have something to say about.
Yeah.
This, I learned last year, it was 2019, that anorexia is the mental health disorder most associated with fatalities. I would have thought it was depression. I would have thought it was something else. Guys, these people are suffering so badly that, I mean, more or less, they're dying from starvation, right? Over a very long period of time. It's not like this is a couple weeks. I mean, it's a very long period of time. So I don't think it is attention-seeking behavior, but you made a really interesting comment when I had brought that up before about sometimes attention-seeking behavior is not a bad thing. It's kind of something else. And what did you say that was again?
Yeah, so I said I think it's important to acknowledge if it is attention-seeking, because if it is, that's a cry for help as well, as much as it is if it was actually valid, right? You know, if someone is, let's say that is the argument that someone is doing for attention seeking, why are they doing that? Like, what's beneath that? Like, let's unpack that. Let's figure out what's going on that they feel they need to, you know, quote unquote, pretend that they have this eating, this extremely serious eating disorder.
Yeah. And so, all right, I think that's kind of good for that, because I was kind of going to get into the fact that I did the same thing, you know, but most people know my story by now. But yeah, there was a lot of attention-seeking behavior in there. Not necessarily a bad thing. It was kind of like, hey, can someone help me out here? Because I don't know how to ask for that yet.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a good time to ask you. I mean, if you are dealing with this stuff, someone out there is listening, and right now they're going through this, and they're like, oh my God, like, I've never gotten help for this. How do you start that conversation for the first time? Because that's tough.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you saw my facial expression. It's really difficult, because it is a very addictive type of disorder. And it's really difficult. And if someone doesn't recognize that it's an issue with themselves, like, they're not going to get the help that they need. And they're not going to be vulnerable with themselves and really unpack what's going on. Because, again, the eating disorder is not a surface level issue. It's not just about food. It's about why do they feel the need to cope and control what's going on in their life? Why do they feel the need to change the way that they look? Why do they feel the need to go to these extreme measures and put their body through these horrible, horrible things? Like, what's going on underneath that? Like, let's figure that out. And that's the scary part. It's not necessarily like, okay, eat food. You know, if it's that easy, they would eat food.
That's conceptually simple. Yeah, very easy to just eat food.
Right.
But why can't you do something
exactly?
So simple, you know?
And I think it's important, I think, being a friend or a loved one, if you notice these behaviors, if you notice that something maybe isn't right, just let them know. I mean, at least the easiest thing, and I think the simplest thing you can do, is just tell them that you're there when they're ready. Like, I'm there for you when you're ready to take this on. I'm there to hold your hand through all of this. And I know this is scary. I know this is difficult. And just really validate, like, what they're going through is difficult. You know, don't, like we said, don't say, okay, like, you know, making it not a big deal and saying, oh, just eat. Okay, I really doubt that they didn't try doing that. and if they are ready, help them look for resources. Like, you can literally go on Google. We're so lucky that we're in a time where we can just Google therapists in my area, eating disorder specialists in my area.
Right.
You know, and we'll get into other things that you can do later just as an individual, like,
sure,
helping yourself. But yeah, just being a support and being there when they're ready to take that on.
Got it. There was another thing I wanted to touch on too, because I don't want to be ignorant here, and I want to make sure I'm using the right terminology. You had described something where you were already a string bean, as self-proclaimed, and you still felt like, okay, I'm fat or I need to lose weight. Is that the term body dysmorphia? Is that the correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So does that also applies for people, and Fallon, you've probably seen this. Fallon's done a lot of, like, lifting, bodybuilding. I'm sure you've seen this with other people in your space, where they literally are huge. They're massive people, and they think they're not big. So is that kind of the same thing? Is there different terms for that, or still body dysmorphia?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and it takes all different kinds of shapes and forms and ideals about yourself, but...
Yeah, and it's just, it's hard for me to comprehend. And I wonder, like, because I guess you don't know that you're doing it at the time. You know, like, do I do that? So I'm not sure, but it's interesting to me that the brain can kind of trick us. I mean, and definitely those top level people using, you know, anabolic steroids competing in the Olympia, it's like they really think they're not big enough or something. And it's kind of these two ends of the spectrum for sure.
I think one thing that definitely kind of promotes that body dysmorphia is due to social media in general. I know when I was bodybuilding, one of the main things I thought was that I'm not good enough still. But looking back at how I looked then, I was training 5-6 days a week. I was absolutely on the top of my game. And I look back, I was like, wow, I actually really looked awesome. Not to, you know, toot myself on the back there. But I think social media in general is just one of those things where it can be such a great thing, but it can also be such a negative thing. And I think it can definitely lead people into a disorder if they compare themselves too much to other people in there.
Absolutely. And I think you're really attesting to the fact that the body dysmorphia, like the thing is, like looking back and seeing their body was never good enough proves the fact that it was never your body. It was that you have an issue that's going on deeper than that.
Yeah, and I guess all of us do to some degree.
Yeah.
I did have social media down here as a note because, of course, all three of these people are close to me. They know I take things to the most scientific level possible. And I've wondered, like, what is social media doing? And from, like, an evolutionary psychology perspective, the problem is if we had these smaller tribes, like, let's say, of 150 to 200 people, well, we're hardwired to compare ourselves in those tribes. And it sounds like kind of tough survival of the fittest type of thing, but that's what it was. You know, this was a mating strategy more or less. Like you're looking at the alpha male or you're looking at the alpha female and we're trying to figure out how to be like them. Maybe that's practical at some time in human history. I don't know. When we're connected with a billion people on social media and we have the ability to say, hey, we can get out of those primitive ways, we still have this monkey mind that's in our head saying, all right, I need to be better. I need to be better. That's, how are you ever going to do that? Even if that it was an actual worthy goal, how are you ever going to do that? How am I ever going to be the biggest guy in the world, you know, or the smartest or the fastest? There's always going to be someone out there. So how do we move away from those ideas of comparison? Because we're probably not going to stop using social media. Most of us are going to continue to use it. How do we step away from that?
Yeah, and I think that really creates an opportunity for us to look inward on ourselves. And one of the girls that I'm working with, she, you know, she struggles with that as well. She was like, how am I going to stop comparing myself? Like, and it's just, it, like you said, it's human nature for us to, we're humans. We always want to be better. We want to be the best at everything. But I think it's important to heal your relationship with yourself. Like, what is it like? The comparison is not a bad thing, right? Like at face value, comparison is not a bad thing. But what's bad is when we start devaluing ourselves in the process. When we start saying, oh, well, you know, maybe they do have bigger cap shoulders than I do. Maybe they are stronger. That's okay. But what's bad is when we look at ourselves and we're like, oh, I suck. I am not worthy. I am weak. All of these things. That's when it starts becoming hurtful. So how do we start changing the dialogue with ourselves? How do we start changing our language with our friends? How do we start putting an importance on like the value that we actually add in relationships? Like I think of all my friends, right? Their bodies have nothing to do with how I view them as a friend. My boyfriend, I don't look at his body and I'm like, oh, I love you because of that. Like I, you know, find value in like personalities and values and morals. And so if that's important to other people, why am I not focusing on bettering that about myself? You know, and I think it's important to enter those situations with grace, especially if you have a historic issue with that and saying, okay, you know, maybe I'm comparing myself with these people, but how do I change my inner dialogue with myself? And how do I start focusing on the things that I add in other people's lives?
I like that a lot. And yeah, my strategy is, I mean, somewhat similar, because you're just focusing on those, the morals and values and the things that actually matter. I'm sure you recognize physical differences. Like we don't live in fantasy land, right? And for me, what I do is I'll recognize those things. I'll say, okay, like where is that coming from? Like that is literally my primitive mind. I think about me running around in the tribe or something. Like how silly is that? Like I don't need to be doing this right now. And I just push it away. And then I focus on the things that actually matter to me. Yes, which is personality, character, like who is this person? So I think that's pretty cool. One thing I want to talk about, because we got about 4 minutes left before the next break, and this is super important because it's kind of going to transition into our conversation around the holiday stuff.
how can we recognize and see this in others? Because I remember I was, you know, a 16-year-old dude at one point, and of course I would never mention names, but I mean, a couple of us here went to the same high school. I know now, or knew years later, because she told me that, you know, a young lady that I ate lunch with every single day was dealing with this stuff. And I looked at it just like you were talking about. Like, she just said, oh, I'm not hungry or whatever. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like, she's not hungry. Like, I'm not even thinking about that type of thing going on. Now, if I had known that, I probably would have tried to be there for her and say, like, hey, what can we do about this? Are you ready to get help? How can we recognize these things in others? Not to tattletale, but to, you know, give them a helping hand if they need it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of hard because, you know, people, you know, we see that people commit suicide and we're like, oh my God, I had no idea. I had no idea they were struggling. This is unfortunately another issue like that. But I think to kind of educate ourselves and just really be in tune with our relationships. And it's difficult because things can look different. Like, eating disorders are on a spectrum, as I've said a million times to you, know. And I think it's important, you know, maybe it's difficult to kind of see what's going on, but, you know, if you notice they're saying things that allude to the fact that something may not be right, maybe work on not, like, making comments about, like, oh, hey, like, you look really good in those jeans. Like, that just kind of, you know, like, let's work on our language with those people. And obviously, like, not eating, heavily restricting yourself, saying, oh, I'm going to do this because I'm going on a vacation. All of these little things, and a lot of it's diet culture, and it's super, this is like a black hole I'm opening up right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's just, you know, it's really difficult is what I'm saying. But if you do know, again, like I said earlier, just giving that person support and saying, like, I'm here for you when you're ready is, like, incredibly huge for that person.
Yeah, and of course, every eating disorder, because there's multiple that look actually very different. And I had a lot of ignorance to that when I was younger. So maybe we can, I mean, almost rapid fire those just while we have the time. Let's take something like anorexia. What are some, like, what is that? Like, how do you describe anorexia?
Yeah, so anorexia is just the restriction of calories to, like, extreme restriction of calories. Mm-hmm. That can look a million different ways. You can overexercise, whatever, compensating to be in that extreme caloric deficit is anorexia.
Yeah, I read something, because obviously I like the literature behind this stuff and just finding these weird things. There's such a perfectionistic aspect to that disorder. They are overrepresented in students that have a 4.0 GPA, which I thought was, like, fascinating. Like, they have these standards that are just, you know, crazy. Okay, I got to always be politically correct. Yes, not crazy. You guys know what I mean. Obviously, yeah. I'm a mental health advocate. Bulimia, how do we define that? Because that's kind of different.
Yeah, so that's binging and purging. And purging can look a multitude of different ways, but binging and purging and also restriction is heavily correlated with that as well.
Okay, and then I'll hit you with the orthorexia, but we still have some time.
No, I'll be super quick with that because it's a super gray area and it's actually not in the DSM. It's not recognized as an actual eating disorder.
What's the DSM for those that don't know? Because I rattle that off all the time, and everyone's like, what is that?
It's basically what, like, social workers, psychologists, and all of us people just kind of look to. It's where all the mental health diagnoses are.
Perfect.
So, in layman's terms. So orthorexia, so it's really comparable to, sort of, to anorexia, where anorexia is the quantity, where orthorexia is the quality, and there's, like, this purity, like, type of thing where everything has to be heavily perfect. And obviously we can get to that conversation later.
Oh, that'll be, yes, you know me.
That is a black hole as well. So, yeah, so that's.
All right, cool. Yeah, because one of the things that Lily and I had discussed on the phone a few days ago is, all right, I'm someone who eats super healthy. I care very much about the quality of my food. I have had chronic disease. So how we define the differences between something like orthorexia and, hey, you just have to eat healthy because you've been sick in your life. And it really comes down to, I think you said, the intentions, right? Like, one is like, has to be perfect. The other, it's like, okay, no, I actually feel like crap if I eat this certain way, so I kind of have to eat the other way. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. There's so much power and intention, especially with food or choices and our relationship with it. So yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. So we're going to be getting into one of the most probably important topics of this entire hour, and that's going to be, hey, or relevant, I should say, how do we do this stuff around the holidays? How can we help people and support them through that? And we will be right back to talk about that, though, after these quick commercial breaks. Hey, are you looking to increase your credibility and grow your health coaching business so that you can confidently solve health issues? Perhaps you have been struggling with your own health and want not only to help yourself, but also help others. Well, we have the course for you. Functional Diagnostic Nutrition provides you with cutting-edge functional lab assessment training, access to lab testing, and other resources to continuously enhance your knowledge about functional health practices so you can actually fix the health issues you or your clients are facing. This all enables you to create a successful, referral-based business globally by doing what you love while positively impacting others. Upon completing the course, you also become board certified through our partnership with the American Association of Drugless Practitioners to enhance your credibility. We are here to support people on a deeper level to get real results and grow your health coaching business. To talk to someone and learn more, you can email fdninfo@afdnp.com. That's fdninfo@afdnp.com. Guys, FDN is actually the certification I got several years back. Fallon's going through it right now. Changed my life. Fallon, are you liking the course?
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's so fun.
Cool. So, all right, 2 for 2. You guys got to check it out.
When you know that you or a loved one would do better mentally with something more than what your current doctor is doing, head to the Patient Experience Center at dhalab.com. View their advanced brain chemistry consultations to quickly and easily test and optimize with an MD. Take brain health in your own hands today with a 10% discount. Use the code HealthCoachEv when checking out for a 10% discount on any test and consultation service. And again, that's dhalab.com.
Folks, we are interrupting this broadcast to welcome you to a new little mini segment that will be added to each 1 hour show. This new segment is called a Health Coach Ev Rant. It's where I call out one of the many things that drive me crazy in healthcare. We're going to start today with the subtle incentivizations the pharmaceutical industry uses to push their products. My family owns a small restaurant that I worked at as a kid and young adult. I started out washing some dishes and eventually moved to working out front, taking some orders on the phone, bussing tables, you know the drill. There was one phone order, though, that immediately struck me as interesting. For obvious reasons, the name of this business will not be mentioned. We'd get a call every single week from a doctor's office. Every time, they'd order a little over $100 worth of food. At the end of the call, they said, "The rep will call with the card in about an hour." What did they mean by that exactly? I later found out that they were referring to was that their pharmaceutical rep would be calling to pay for the doctor office's lunch that day. I asked my mom and aunt how often this happened, and it turns out it happened every week. When I wrote my book over a year ago and noted this story, I made some calculations for how much had been spent by the pharma company on the doctor's office over the years. I concluded that at least $32,000 to $40,000 had been spent. I've had people argue me and say that this is just a nice business gesture. Give me a break. One lunch every year is a nice business gesture. Spending a lifetime amount of $40,000 is intentional, subtle persuasion. Do you think these multi-billion dollar companies are stupid? Do you think they spent that kind of money if they weren't making a massive profit? Tell me this. How the hell does this have a place in healthcare? Shouldn't medications be given out based on who absolutely needs them and not which producer is best at persuasion? But no surprise here. Remember episode 1 of this show? You learned that America is also one of a whopping 2 countries in this world who allow direct-to-consumer pharmaceutical advertising. It's no wonder that America consumes 75% of the world's medication, despite only making up 4% of the population. Hey, welcome back to the Health Coach Ev Show, where we are leveling the playing field around physical and mental health. I'm your host, Evan Transu, a.k.a. Health Coach Ev. And we're here with a few wonderful ladies today. Fallon Morningstar, Ali Litvak, Lily Riley, our featured guest, talking about mental health, disordered eating, eating disorders, lots of different stuff. So we're going to get right back into it and kind of transition into a time where we're giving some very relevant information for people during this holiday season. Because we had talked, and this is one of the main reasons we want to do the show, would you say this time of year, the holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, those types of things, is the toughest for people with eating disorders?
Absolutely.
Okay, so what is this like, if you don't mind kind of going into it? Let's go back to the time where you're actively dealing with this stuff. I mean, what are the holidays like for you? What's going through your head?
Yeah, and obviously it's important to note that I've dealt with multiple eating disorders during different holidays. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of looked a bit different, I think. But, you know, let's think about like family. Family is a huge stressor for a lot of people. Not everybody, fortunately, has like good relationships with their family. I was lucky enough to be really close with my siblings, but struggled with parent relations. So being around my mom around that time was really, really difficult for me. And it caused me to be really stressed, and obviously being around food and trying to control things made that more difficult. So let's go back to when I was really dealing with like anorexia. I remember I would put food on my plate. I would just kind of sit there and like play around with it. And I just wouldn't really grab more food. It wasn't like in a place or easy, readily available to like go and throw my food out, which is some behaviors that I had done in the past. But and then I think a really I think this is when it really, really got bad, when I was dealing with my binge eating disorder, and that was after heavily restricting. Let me go in chronological order here. So when I was dealing heavily with my orthorexia, I had this idea of like purity of food. Like I couldn't have anything if I didn't know how it was prepared. I would absolutely freak out. I remember I would like cry before big meals. If I was going to go out with friends, I would cry. So like being at Thanksgiving where there's all this food where I don't really know how necessarily it is prepared because everybody brings different dishes. So I don't know how much butter's in there, I don't know how much salt is in there, how much sugar are in the desserts. So I would make my own stuff. I would pick things that just looked really quote unquote clean, which personally I don't like using that term, but just looked really clean. I would have like just the turkey. I would not have anything with like potatoes. It just looked really like looking back, just really like not, I wouldn't want to eat that now.
Right.
And so then that's how that looked for me. And everyone would be like, oh, Lily, like you're being so healthy. So it validated this idea like, oh, I'm doing a good thing. Like this behavior is accepted. Like this makes people like me more that I'm doing this. And I'm shredded and I have veins on my abs and my shoulders are capped. Like, and it was just, and everyone's like, oh, Lily, you look so good. Lily, you look like you've gotten slimmer. What are you doing? All of these things that I'm like, oh my God, all these lights and serotonin boosts are going off in my head. Like, yeah. Oh my God, like I'm doing something good. And it was horrible. I was miserable. I had horrible anxiety. I couldn't enjoy time with my family and my siblings, like people that I hold near and dear to my heart. Like family is so big to me, and not being able to enjoy what Thanksgiving is supposed to be about, the time that only comes once a year, is so, so sad.
Right.
And so many people deal with that, right? And then, you know, moving towards when I was binging heavily, and this was actually during my Ironman training. It happened, I would say maybe it started earlier that year, but was really, really bad afterward. And the training, I guess the November before. But anyway, I would kind of hide the fact, oh, I'm training. Like I had huge training sessions, and like, because people, it's really shameful. Like there's a lot of shame around eating disorders, no matter what you kind of deal with. Right. And just kind of like over validating your food choices, saying like, oh, well, I'm still hungry. Like you are, like nobody cares. Right. Nobody cares how much you're eating, really. And if people are making comments, it's because they're having issues. If someone ate extra food, I'd be like, go you, eat all the food that you want. But it's just so much shame, you know, and it was just always validating like, but I ate really healthy this entire week and now I have a huge training session tomorrow, so I have to carb load and everything. And yeah. It was just horrible. Like it was actually horrible.
Yeah. And well, I mean, kind of. How the heck are you training, by the way, with all this stuff going on? I mean, like, the body needs fuel. Like, is the body just breaking down? Are you getting injuries during this time or something?
Yeah, so I mean, it was difficult for me to deal with the appetite that I had. Like, I had an insatiable appetite. Like, I would eat a full meal, like, huge plate of food, so much, and I would be completely full. And then an hour later, I would be equally as hungry again. And for me, that was so difficult because I had this negative connotation with hunger. And because when you put control on yourself, you have this like mathematical thinking with an eating disorder, like I'm only allowed to eat this much. And you like do all these calculations in your head. So when your body is requiring more food, you're like, whoa, 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 like losing the control here. Like, how am I gonna, like, this doesn't fit in my calculations. This doesn't fit in what I'm allowed for the day. And that's when I would start dealing with heavy anxiety. I would like bawl my eyes out, like in my room when I would eat, and then I would like binge, and then I would be so upset. I was like, what did I do? You completely black out when you binge. Like, you have, it's out of body experience. Like, you cannot control yourself. They say it's like lights out in your brain, like food in. That's exactly what happens. And after you're like, what? Like, no food makes sense. Like, peanut butter, pasta, pizza, like nothing makes sense. And it's just filling this void. And it doesn't matter how full you get to a point where you're like painfully full and you still want to eat more. And I would sit there crying my eyes out. I'm like, what's going on? Like, how do I control this again? And then you go back to restricting and then binging. And it was just, I remember training after a binge and it was horrible. I have thrown up on long runs before because I felt so ill. I dealt with injuries, definitely.
Okay. What is, because we've brought up binge eating a few times now, and that wasn't one of the original, I didn't even think to ask. It wasn't one of the original definitions we described. I don't really know. I know bulimia has times of binging. Like, is there a difference between bulimia and binge eating disorder?
Yeah.
And if so, what is it?
Yeah. So bulimia is purging. So you're making yourself throw up. Normally, some people use I don't know if that necessarily falls into it, but I know people have used laxatives with that. So it's just purging your body of everything that you've had. And normally it's through throwing up. That's the classic
way. Does it include binging though?
Yes. Okay, normally. Right. It doesn't always. Sometimes you can just eat food and you're it's just the act of heavily purging. So, and normally by throwing up, but binging, you don't necessarily have to be purging. So binging is almost 100% of the time correlated with restricting. So you normally see, polar opposites. You see someone heavily restricting and then heavily binging, and then it's just back, forth, back, forth.
Okay, so just so I have this clear, because I want it clear for the audience too.
Yeah.
Binge eating, you'll have, times of a lot of food and then none at all, but you're not necessarily purging, where bulimia could have that binging aspect, but you're almost not only restricting, you're trying to push things out.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the difference there. I get that now. I want to check in real quick with our other ladies here, just in case. You got anything to say, anything to add? Are we good for it now?
I feel like sometimes, although I would never have labeled myself to have an eating disorder, I think with a lot of my lifestyle habits is working full time, going to graduate school, training, like I said a little bit earlier, 5-6 days a week, huge amount of stress, as you can imagine. And I would just absolutely binge. And I think it just turns into a vicious cycle. I mean, mostly the binge eating was sweets, was a lot of sugar. And it just kept increasing and increasing until there was kind of a breaking point where I needed to realize, okay, this is definitely not working for me. How can I change this? And I think, even now, as I'm getting more into my personal development journey, meditating, reading, all this good stuff, I think it's definitely helped me have more of an awareness around what I'm consuming. Is this too much stress right now? What do I need to do to change that? And I just wanted to share that quickly with you all.
Awesome. Got anything, Al? Good for you now. So would you describe that almost, because you said obviously that wouldn't meet the criteria necessarily of an eating disorder, so that might be more in that category of disordered eating. All right, we only got a minute, but all right, let's start that conversation at least, because it's important, because that was one of the main things too today. Is what the heck is the difference between disordered eating and an eating disorder? Because a lot of people have disordered eating.
Absolutely.
So
So eating disorders and disordered eating, it's all on a spectrum, right? So we think of the sickest person that we could possibly think of. And obviously the first thing comes to mind is an anorexic person in their deathbed in the hospital on feeding tubes and things in their veins and everything. And then we have someone who is just dealing with a little bit of restriction, I'm going to cut things out of my diet. And people fall on that spectrum. And it's sometimes it's hard, especially with orthorexia, like we said, with that gray area, it's hard to determine what's disordered and do you actually have an eating disorder?
Okay, cool. And then I have a few more questions about that right after these last commercial breaks.
Hey, if you're a parent who wants to understand the mental health challenges your child faces, then Lucas Wolf's new book, My Perfect Life, How Depression Almost Ended It and How I Found Purpose Through Pain, is for you. Through goofy, relatable stories, you'll see the world from the eyes of someone silently battling depression. More importantly, you'll learn how Lucas found hope and purpose through his pain. Get your copy of My Perfect Life today, available on Amazon by searching Lucas Wolf, and that's Wolf with an E. Does the pandemic have your hair looking a little funky? Do people stop and glance at you while you walk down the street? Folks, hair salons have been open for a while now. It's time to get that haircut you've been procrastinating. And when you do it, you should head to Hair and Visions in Ottsville, PA. Hair and Visions is open Tuesday through Saturday. They specialize in coloring and also offer keratin treatments that give your hair a smooth finish. Hair and Visions offers haircuts for all ages, so you can bring the whole fam. Schedule your appointment today by calling 610-847-8894. That's 610-847-8894. Tell them Health Coach Ev sent you.
All right, welcome back to the Health Coach Ev Show, where we are leveling the playing field around physical and mental health. I'm your host, Evan Trantu, a.k.a. Health Coach Ev. I've said these wonderful people's names three times now, so we'll take a little break on that. We're going to get back here with Lily. We are talking about eating disorders, disordered eating, mental health in general. And I know Fallon here had a question, so we're going to start with that for this segment.
I think it would be super helpful if you could describe to our audience here about what you currently eat during the holidays as you are now kind of, you know, pulled back from that eating disorder. I mean, what does your plate look like now during the holidays?
Yeah, this is a really simple answer. It's whatever my body kind of wants, you know, and that's the place I and that has taken me a long time to get to that point. And when you remove, this is the thing, the more that you try to control food, the more food has power over you. And I've had to learn that through trying to control it for years. And once I remove that, oh, I can't have this, and I put myself in a place where I can have whatever I want. And whatever quantity that I want it, I don't have a need to overdo it. I don't have a need to like binge and shove pumpkin pie in my mouth and like have bowls and bowls of mashed potatoes because I don't have this thing. If I can't have it now, I can never have it again. It's whatever I want.
Mm-hmm. What? Because this is tough for me because Lily and I have collabed a few times. We've even actually like, I've had you send stuff or give recommendations to certain clients that I have. And, I never want to be one-sided with things, but like you said yourself, you had warned me, like some of the information almost contradicts itself. So I'm wondering where we can get the middle ground. In my world of chronic disease, I know 100% there is restriction sometimes, unnecessarily so. I've done that myself. And then I know there's other things like if I eat gluten because of the genetics that I have and the sensitivity that I have, that is a very stupid idea for me. That is bad. It is not going to work. It causes immediate physical symptoms. What can someone do if they do have to like restrict certain things like that? Because this is tough during the holidays. I bring my own food to Thanksgiving. I can't eat what my family's eating for the most part. Like, is there a middle ground there where like we can have a healthy level? And like, how do we accept that, I guess, that we need to do something here, but we don't want to completely restrict? Like, do I just get a gluten-free fun thing? Should I be going to the gluten-free bakery? Like, what's the solution there, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think this kind of touches on like the whole like orthorexic thing that we were kind of talking about. And it's a really important conversation to have because, like I said, there is a lot of power behind intention, right? And your intentions purely come from, if I eat this, I'm going to feel like garbage. I can't have it. It's going to do X, Y, Z. Whereas if someone who's dealing with orthorexia, they're like, I can have this because my world is going to end. Like, they're going to have an anxiety attack. They think that they're going to lose every bit of progress they have. It's like this, they lose every sense of control that they have. And, you know, approaching that, removing that fear, like, okay, and I am obviously one to say, I don't like to say foods are good and bad. There are foods that are way better for you than others. They're more nutrient dense.
Yes.
But does that mean that we can't have the foods that are bad for us, quote unquote? I mean, I think it would be silly to say that some foods break down in our body, like bad foods are, you know, better than others, or I think that's just silly. Like, scientifically, there are foods that are better for us, you know, and we can't deny that fact. But again, is it morally wrong if we have something that's not as good for us? And trusting your body that it's going to crave things once we allow it to make the choices that it wants. If we truly live intuitively and we say, look, body, have at it. Like, you have what you want. Your body's not going to be craving sugar, sugar, sugar all the time. Like, we kind of think with sugar addictions, you know, sugar addictions are like, this is obviously a whole nother conversation, but we like when we remove this restriction and remove this idea that we can't have it, your body doesn't feel the need to put itself in this like famine mode, because mentally when you are restricting yourself, you're putting your mind in this like thing that this food doesn't exist, but once it's on my plate, it's going all in me. Like, this is all that I want. And I think it's, again, I'm talking about like the intentions behind this. So, and again, it's hard to get to that place where you totally set yourself free and say, look, like I'm going to eat what I want and my body's going to tell me when I'm done. It's obviously different if you historically have issues with eating disorders and disordered eating, right, and where your mind's at, but it's 100% the intentions, because orthorexia just consumes your life like completely. Whereas you're like, I can't have gluten, I'm gonna feel like garbage.
Right. And okay, that's a very fair description. I think I have a better understanding now, because no one's ever said that to me, but like I'm study mental health, so I've read the definitions. I'm like, like, what is the difference there between what I'm doing and like what that is, right? Orthorexia, where Absolutely. Someone doesn't really need to be doing that.
I think one thing that's super important to look at when Lily mentioned the intent, you know, what are you intending to do by eating this poor food or the not so good food? I think I was just talking to my mom on the way down to the radio station. We were talking about what dessert are we going to have for the family on Thanksgiving? You know, we're going to make a coffee cake. And I was like, okay, well, can you substitute regular flour for coconut flour? And she said, absolutely. So it's just like, you can still certainly eat those maybe not so good foods for you, but like switch the alternatives. I mean, there's so many good healthy alternatives that you can put inside your food that can still taste phenomenal.
Yeah, and I just want to like touch on that because that's kind of what I did for years. Like I only ate healthy desserts, like cleanest things, and it's like that's awesome. Like if your intention is I just want to feel better after eating that, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. But you know, you're allowed to have the Betty Crocker mix from the grocery store with all the chemicals in it if you want. Food is enjoyment. Food is an experience. Food is connection. You know, it's a part of like who we are as people. You know, and that's okay. And it's not morally wrong to choose a thing that might not make you feel good, you know?
Right. Yeah, okay, that's really fair. All right, few more things. We got about 5 minutes left in the show. This hour has flown by, this is cool. I wanted to talk about calories because I know you're probably not tracking calories nowadays because that's very counterintuitive, or am I incorrect?
No, I'm not, but.
Okay, what I was gonna ask then though, because I'm sure you have rough estimates, I think there are very unrealistic expectations of how much, many calories human beings should be eating. So, because you've talked about this before in your social media, what should an average adult female or average adult male, and we're talking averages, so these can go very far on either end, what should they be eating calorie-wise? Like, do you know?
So, this is like a...
However you want to approach it is cool.
No. Totally, 100%. And the cool thing about health, and this is, I'm obviously going to relate this, is that if it was so easy and there was one answer, we wouldn't have the field that we have in health and nutrition. Like there are so many different avenues, so many different routes. And I think it's the message we're sending out on social media is what works for me is not going to work for you because we're two completely different people. And I think that goes along with calories. Like, you know, I think it's not like how much should you be eating, but like don't revolve your day around a certain number. Like your body is going to change every single day. I think it would be weird if our bodies required the same amount of calories every day, which means we would be doing the same movements every single day. And we would be saying the same words every day. Like our bodies are machines and are made to have food. And like to say that you might need the same amount as someone else, like trust your body. Like, but if we're talking about numbers, this whole like even like 12, like the whole like 1200 calorie, 1500 calorie is normally not enough for a female, you know?
Pretty low. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty low.
Yeah. And I think it's more like we should move away from the numbers. And I know and again, this is obviously for me too, which I have history with that. That's like a slippery slope. We'll not walk down that path. But some people use it as a tool. Like we can use those things as tools. We shouldn't be afraid to know what we're putting in our bodies. Like, but I think to heavily rely on that for the rest of our lives is a bit, I just wouldn't want to live my life that way, like always calculating things.
Right.
But that's me, you know? And if that works for you, that's awesome. And if you're happy and you can make food choices that make you happy and you feel good, go at it.
Right. And that's so, yes, because it's just a tool, right? Like a tool, a calorie tracking can be a great tool for some people. I have to do it if I want to gain weight efficiently, you know, because I burn through calories, right? Like I can eat 4,000 a day easy and I still will never go over 170 pounds as a 6-foot male. That's how I work. But like something with clients, for example, I believe intermittent fasting, a light intermittent fast, you know, 14 to 16 hours, fantastic tool for the body. If I have a client coming to me and they put in their history form, oh yeah, I've had, you know, anorexia or whatever. Okay, we're not going to use that tool. There's many other things that can make you healthy without using that. So it's just one thing. Couple minutes left here. I know we got to talk about like your coaching business that you just started, because I know that there's got to be people out there that are listening. You're like, all right, like how do I get connected with this woman? So what are you doing now? And like, what did you just start business-wise?
Yeah, so I'm actually working on really, really taking off with my individual coaching business. But it's obviously the foundation is healing your relationship with your food, exercise, and yourself. Which, like I've said, it doesn't matter what you look like. You can be so unhappy. I was extremely shredded at one point, and I was miserable. I was so unhappy. That was the most depressive I've been in my life. And I really work with finding movements and exercises that meet people's goals, but also that they enjoy and they don't feel forced. Like one girl, I check in with her every week, and I'm like, do you like this? Do you enjoy it? We've changed her workouts like every week, you know,
okay,
because
yeah.
and healing things with food. Like we talk about, you know, did you have any food triggers? Like do you struggle with binging? And some people don't struggle with it, so we don't really talk about that. So it's a coaching business, but obviously from the foundation of let's get to intuitive eating. Let's get to actually figure out what works for you personally. So one day I don't have to work with you.
Right. There's a really, I mean, with all due respect to the many people I've talked to, there's only a handful of people that I've interviewed and dealt with overall that when you talk to them, the authenticity of their healing is so clear. And it's like, all right, no, they've really done the work. They've really done a lot of this stuff. And I mean, I feel like we could go on forever. I think we're going to have to bring you on the Health Coach Ev Show off the air to talk more about, I mean, we could probably go for another, 30 minutes talking about the coping yeah. strategies and stuff. So I don't want to miss that. Guys listening out there, we do have a podcast platform that has all these radio shows, but then additional episodes, usually with the same guests or guests that couldn't get on the radio to talk about this stuff. And I mean, I can't believe we just went through an entire hour. So that's awesome. Very good thing. Where can people find you though, if they want to work with you? Like, what's the easiest avenue for them to do that?
Yeah, so I have a social media page. It's called Finding a Little Balance. And that's just where people kind of reach out to me. It's just kind of taken off from there. So, and I share like some really vulnerable stuff on there. I talk about kind of my journey in relationship with food. And yeah.
Yeah, you're just like, you're real. Like, it's just as real as you could possibly get. And just to be clear for people, that's Finding a Lil, L-I-L, like it's Lily, right?
Yeah,
like L-I-L
yeah.
Balance. Okay, and then I know our audience out there, because generally, especially on the radio, the people listening live right now, it's going to be an older audience. Not, maybe they don't have an Instagram. So you guys are more than welcome. Go to evantransu.com. You can use the contact form there and I can get you connected to Lily like via email or something like that. But we are coming to the end of our time. Really quick, just want to run around. Fal, did you have a good time?
I had an amazing time. Thank you so much.
Al, how you doing over there?
Great. Okay. Thank
Glad
you.
It's over. And Lily, thank you so much for being here. And thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Health Coach Ev Show, where we are leveling the playing field around physical and mental health. As always, you can get in contact with me by heading over to www.evantransu.com. And we will see you guys next week with another hour-long show. Thanks so much.